Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got another wonderful show in store for you with a beautiful guest. I will be bringing her on in just a moment. But first, of course, we have my blog post from a couple of years ago. Have a feeling probably an apropos one, as they always are. So today's blog post is entitled, Busyness is the Result of Not Wanting to Feel Our Feelings. We are all busier these days. Life seems to be moving so quickly. It can feel like it is hard to catch our breath. Yet busyness is not the problem. Busyness is merely the symptom. A symptom of something deeper. Because we do not often take the time to ask, why are we so busy? We basically take it for granted. Everyone else seems so busy. Why shouldn't we be busy too? Which totally misses the point. Actually, two. The first point being that we are the ones who have control over how busy we are or aren't. Our busyness comes from our choices. There might be some external factors that influence our time and how much we feel we have to do, yet ultimately, we are the ones who make the decision each and every day as to whether we will engage in the activities at all. We may not like the consequences, but there are always other choices. The second point is to look at the underlying reasons why we choose to do so much in our lives. Why we choose to be so active and so busy all the time. Would it not make more sense for us to give ourselves more time to relax, to enjoy life? Of course it would. So why don't we? The simple answer is that we are afraid to just sit and be with ourselves. That we are actually terrified to not be doing something all the time. Because if we are not doing anything, we have to just be with ourselves and feel what we have been avoiding feeling. Therein lies the true answer. To just sit and do nothing is much harder than we imagine. For us to turn off all the distractions, not look at our screens, and just sit down and breathe can be more challenging than any of us suspect. We have been going, going, going for so long that we have gotten used to not giving ourselves a break. A break to just stop and feel for a change. Perhaps there is some anxiety, depression, worry, fear, guilt, shame, or any one of 100 other emotions that we are afraid to feel. If we take the time to stop and start to feel what is going on inside us, the floodgates might open and the feelings could become overwhelming. So how can we stop? With such a fear driving us, how can we take a moment to just be? The real question to ask is how can we not? For those unfelt emotions are still there waiting for us, building up day after day. Our busyness does not make them go away. It only delays the inevitable. Yet if we can just stop, even for a moment, and start to feel a little bit, then we have made progress. A little at a time, we can learn to be comfortable feeling again. even those uncomfortable feelings. We do not have to do it all at once. But if we want to be less busy in our lives, then we have to get used to taking a moment to feel what it feels like to just be. Looking for distractions when we feel uncomfortable is normal. It is okay not to want to feel something right away. The trick is to be more conscious and aware of that decision and not let it rule our lives. Learning to be comfortable to just sit and feel is a great way to be less busy. So how are you using busyness to distract yourself from feeling? Can you give yourself some space to just sit and feel? So I wrote this blog post a couple of years ago, and it really came from seeing it in people that I work with and also seeing it in myself, that how easy and how much we distract ourselves. You know, having the phone ever present, always scrolling through something, answering text messages, responding to emails. It's like ever since, I mean, this was already happening before the pandemic, but it sort of feels like since the pandemic, things have accelerated tremendously, where people just can't stand to not just sit and be. And we're literally living in an epidemic of distraction. Every day, you can see people. I cannot tell you how many times I have gone to a restaurant with my wife and we're talking and we look at the other tables in the restaurant and everybody at the table is on their phone and not talking to the person that's right in front of them. But a lot of people I've worked with have said, like, they feel so busy in their lives, they just can't stop doing. And whenever I say, well, why can't you just sit and relax for a little while? Oh, no, I can't do that because I have to do this and I have to do that and I have kids and I have this and I have that and I have that. And I'm like, I understand, but those aren't reasons why you can't stop and do something. Those are just excuses why you aren't. So I really wanted to just express in this blog post and share it with you all today that I understand we can't go from being totally distracted to totally present in our lives. It doesn't work that way. It's a muscle we need to rebuild. We used to have this muscle, but when things get too difficult, too challenging, too traumatic, we all check out. It's nothing unusual. But as adults, we can start to practice just, just getting back into presence with ourselves, let alone other people. But if we can just learn to start and sit with ourselves for 5 minutes, just take 5 minutes once an hour or once every couple of hours. You don't have to be on your phone or on the computer all the time, constantly, every day, all day long. We can take a break. Now, look, when there are emergencies, there are emergencies. You know, if you're dealing with a sick family relative and you got to be on call, like, that's perfectly understandable. But that's not most of us, and that's not most of the time. And the thing is, the more used we get to being distracted, the harder and harder and harder it is for us to learn to be present with each other. And then we really start to lose one of the most precious aspects of life, So look, I'm not saying you got to go from 0 to 60 in 1 second, but just start to notice first, how distracted are you really? And then once you notice how distracted you are, then just find little ways to pause. Take a breath. Don't rush from one meeting to the next meeting, from one task to the next task, from one project to the next project. Take a moment. Just be with yourself. Take a breath and feel like, is there some anxiety there? Is there some concern, some worry? Do you have some thoughts in the back of your head that you've not been paying attention to? So this is a call to be gentle with ourselves, but to recognize, where is our attention going? Why are we making the choices that we're making? When we can stop and reflect on those things, then we can learn to be more empowered. Then we can learn to make different choices. Then we can learn to show up a little differently. All right, so that's my blog post for this week. Again, the title is Busyness is the Result of Not Wanting to Feel Our Feelings. And of course, you can always see my blog on my personal website, theconsciousconsultant.com, or on the station's website at talkradio.nyc/blog. All right, now, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Sarah Roccasano. All right, world traveling author, international speaker, way shower, and founder of Embolden Adventures. Several years ago, Sarah left a tenured career in finance and renewable energy across Wall Street and corporate America to undergo a profound personal transformation. From the depths of the oceans to the heights of the mountains to the ancient megalithic sites and everywhere in between, she has explored over 43 countries. Wow, you're my hero. And more than half of the United States. Each journey deepening a 2-decade spiritual awakening shaped by wisdom keepers, the natural world, and the call to adventure. Through Embolden Adventures, Sarah has built an encouragement platform that inspires personal, professional, and spiritual transformation. Her forthcoming book, Stone Temple Passport, Awake and Radiate with Mama Ayahuasca, will be coming out later this year in the first of her Embolden Adventure Transformational Series. A true story travel memoir that weaves together sacred sites, plant medicine, and the inner pilgrimage of becoming. Sarah's path reflects what happens when we trade the certainty of a conventional career for a deeper certainty of following the soul. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Sarah.
Hi, Sam. Thank you for having me. And hello, everyone. How exciting. What an introduction. Thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. It's a pleasure to connect and have you on the show. So of course, I have to ask, like, what sort of initiated that transformation? Like, how did you go from just a normal person with a normal career into somebody, you know, traveling the world, 43 countries, oh my God, and getting so deep into this spiritual world we live in?
Well, I guess the question is, what's normal, right? Right? Are we all the same? Are we all going to be the same construct, the same sort of stay in order and do what you're told and listen to the external world pushing you around? And I think your blog post is really answering the question, right? It's about a war in your consciousness and the constant addiction to being busy. And I think that has a lot to do with giving your power away to the external world and conforming and complying. So I think a lot of that is just us like learning to be in the matrix and be in a situation where the world around us provides And we give our sovereignty up for that in return. So I think it was thrusted upon me to change my life. The world around me was rejecting me. I got laid off three times in the 20 plus year career. On paper, it looks amazing. But, living and working in New York City, it has its trade-offs, and it really can drain your consciousness and your soul. So I think the result was me seeking and listening internally to the call and trying not to be busy while the busyness around me was competing for my consciousness and attention.
So you're in the city also. Where are you?
I
Are
left the
you?
city.
Oh, you left
I
the
was
city.
in. Yeah, I was in the city for 22 years. I graduated college. I went to Cornell up in Ithaca, New York. I was an engineering student there. And then post 9/11 in 2022, 2002, I came to the city after college and started working, across the various spectrum, Wall Street, private equity, renewable energy, government, consulting, and so on and so forth. So I was in the city for 22 plus years until finally when I sold my apartment last year or 2 years ago in 2024.
Sorry, I missed you. All right, well, you let me know when you come back for a visit. So was it just like getting laid off so many times? Like, what was it that really got you to say, you know what? I can't be part of the matrix anymore. This isn't for me. I need something different. And then sort of where did you go from there?
Yeah, well, 2022 was that breaking point, but it was the last straw on the camel's back, ultimately, as that saying goes. But it was something that was leading up to for so long. So, the rainforest called me in early 2020, and so I worked with the plant medicine ayahuasca for seven ceremonies with the Shipibo shamans in the Amazon, and it was an experience unlike anything before, because I never worked with any psychedelics, never touched any real drugs, only really was partying in the meatpacking district with the bottles and the table service, back in the day, in New York City, that sort of existence, the nightlife. So that was a beginning. But prior to working with the medicine, it's been something where every time I was laid off, my spiritual seeking would increase and really blossom, whether it was working with mediums or past life regression sort of experiences, or even traveling. A lot of where I was going to see places around the world was driven by my need to scuba dive, and it was a healing for me. A way to kind of ground and cleanse and to really offset the real kind of rigmarole, the intensity, the stress, the toxicity of working nonstop in New York City 24/7, right? So that was kind of a blessing in itself that led to this journey to finally say, that's it, I quit in 2022. But it was something simple. It was, working on a conference call with some senior leader who said a comment that wasn't ideal. And it kind of really threw me in a tailspin. And I said, that's it, I quit. I'm going to write a book. No plan. And here I am 4 years later, about to release the book. So there's a lot there to talk about. But generally speaking, it was something that has been brewing within for so long in terms of, knowing sense of self-empowerment and a deeper connection to the higher powers and spiritual understanding, wisdom, and growth, compared to, working in a sort of controlled environment, for a paycheck.
But even like, again, going to see a psychic or a medium or doing past life regression, which, has been around forever, but still there are a lot of people who don't seek that out. And so I'm just curious, like, can you recall, like, what was your first kind of touch to the spiritual world, and what was that experience like for you?
A great question. I have to think about that for a moment. The first touch to the spiritual world, I know the answer. I just got goosebumps, so that's validation. It had to have been when I was very young, because as I was writing this book, a lot had been coming through for me to really self-reflect, which is another what your kind of encouragements your blog post is asking, is self-reflection and going within and being in a quiet space. And I think a lot of what I was doing as a child, I grew up in Connecticut in the woods, and my family's from Brooklyn. I have extended Italian American family in Brooklyn, and so for me it was a bit of a dichotomy. Like, we would go to the city as a child and see the sidewalks and food delivery and Grand Central Station, But then I grew up in the woods and the sticks near farms in a very rural part of Connecticut. So the spiritual sort of awareness was when I would spend time as a child, a 6-year-old even, by the babbling brook in my backyard, just in quiet solitude, being connected to the natural world around me, looking for frogs, looking for, those water bugs that stay on top of the water, hearing the birds, looking for snakes, all those sort of things that help me better understand the beautiful, conscious, and intelligent world that's around me. And also, too, I remember, I st still to this day remember staring out the window of my living room and looking out to the rhododendron bush and the green grass and just the world around me, and thinking, I was in a deep meditative state. And I just inherently knew as a very young child that we had many multiple lives. We don't just live one life. We've incarnated many, many, many times, and we continue to. And so I kind of knew this just from this deep meditative state I was in as a young child. And I remember asking myself, well, if I wanted to be anything I want, any time in my life, anytime throughout the world, in the past, present, or future, what would be the best sort of existence I could choose? And I decided at 6 years old, well, I want to be a Native American in Connecticut, where I live right now, before colonization happened. I want to be back in time with nature and being one and in reciprocity with this beautiful, conscious, intelligent existence around me. And I'm cared for it, and I know how to provide for myself and for others and be in a state of gratitude and be one with the seasons and know that there's something larger beyond, our waking five senses that's there for us. And that's where you find that certainty and solitude and your sense of empowerment, and you close out the outside world that's busy, that's vying for your attention and your consciousness. So I think that's what the big aha way back when at 6 years old.
Wow. Yeah, it's not unusual. I've interviewed many people on the show who really their connection to spirit came through their connection with nature. And that when we allow ourselves to immerse ourselves in nature, it's very healing. It's very calming. They say it's hard to get depressed when you're in the beauty of nature. So yeah, I can totally get that, how being so in touch with nature as you were growing up really kind of awakening that within your soul. And then I guess as with most of us, we go to school, we go out and we get a job, and we kind of lose that until something brings us back to it, which I guess in your case was, all these challenging experiences at work. And it's kind of funny, my wife said, I was never meant to be in the normal business world. Like for me, like doing healing work was always like the thing I'm most suited for. What got you to go to that first ayahuasca experience in the jungle?
Yeah, so I was already on my way to Morocco for a bachelorette party in early January 2020. And my friend Michelle, who's in the city, she asked me, and my book goes into this, it's 100% true story, and I documented the whole thing through journaling and photographs and the like. And so in like around Halloween 2019 is when she asked me, like, do you want to come with me to work with ayahuasca? And I kind of knew what it was, and I wasn't 100% sure. Like, what am I going to do with this? Like, this is intense. This is a big decision, and I have to really think about this. But at the same time, the easy answer was, I can't. I'm already going to Morocco, and I don't have enough vacation time. So that was kind of a cop-out answer, but I left it open, and I said to her, if I get laid off, which that was the kind of rumblings going on at the time, I'll consider it. I think I'm gonna go. It's really kind of what I said with some, really false courage. And then within, a week or so, I got laid off.
Wow.
That's what happened. Yeah, and I didn't
Oh my
expect it.
God.
And it turns out, in hindsight, I was one of the ones that was added to the list, I think, like one of the last ones. I wasn't really considered at first. So I truly believe now that all the coincidences, synchronicities that I look back upon that were all happening around me at that time were pointing the way. It was a calling, as you probably know, right? The medicine calls. And I accepted the call. I picked up the phone. But at that point, I kind of had to scramble. I was like, oh no, I got to really think about this now. So what I did was I did a lot of research and I wanted to make sure that this was the right decision. And I went to Temple of the Way of Light, which is one of the premier places in the world, and they have excellent resources on their website. So I basically listened to almost every single video testimonial I could get my hands on, and then did a lot of work with other resources and trying to get an understanding, and then had a conversation with one of the facilitators. So I put my deposit down. I got bold. I did it. And then what I did was I tacked on more adventures afterwards. But it worked out seamlessly because when I asked Michelle, what dates are you thinking now that I'm laid off? Like, what are you thinking here? She goes, well, I picked February 2nd and it's seven ceremonies. It's over 2 weeks. You know, what can you do it? And I looked at my itinerary because I had already booked my flights to and from Morocco. I landed at JFK. The time I needed to be on the plane to Peru at the same JFK. So what happened was I would get my bags in terminal whatever four and go over to the other terminal and recheck my bags and continue on to Peru and to Iquitos. So that's it just was undeniable I had to do this. And so I showed up with an open mind, but also a critical mind in some ways too, because I didn't always get myself into, was this just drugs? Like, what am I doing here? And then it changed my life.
What was that very first medicine experience like? Because, doing ayahuasca is your first introduction to plant medicine work. It's like jumping into the deep end of the pool.
Oh, sure. It's like the Mount Everest of psychedelics, and it's working with the wisdom keepers and the lineage holders of the Shipibo tradition. So it's in their sacred Moluka space. There was five maestros and maestras. So this was the pinnacle of an experience you can have, thankfully. And I remember that first night in the Moluka, I was kind of in awe. They were all beautifully dressed, and my book goes into the very detailed explanations of all of it. They're in their bangles and their embroidered shabiba wear and their kind of floral sort of tops and they themselves are under the medicine as well, and they're singing their Ikaros, which is the songs of the plants sung in shabibo and Quechua and some Spanish intertwined. And so that whole experience, I mean, the first of the seven
Seven's a
was
lot to start with. I'm amazed.
a lot to start with, exactly. And they have it set up in such a way where it's done with intention. So the first ceremony is a diagnostic ceremony. The next two are the cleansing ceremonies, and then the rebalancing ceremonies. And then ultimately, ceremony seven is the arcana, which is the sealing ceremony. So it's done with intention and purpose for the purpose of healing and growing and transformation. So the first ceremony was a joyous one in a lot of ways. It was what you typically think of working with psychedelics. You're seeing beautiful entities and you're seeing the dimensional grids in kind of the dark kind of canvas. You're seeing colors in very hyper color, like blues and reds and electric yellows. And I just remember as the Ikaros were first sung in the middle of the Moloka in unison, I felt like I woke up. And I got goosebumps again thinking about this. I literally felt like I was with this energy all along throughout my infinite existence of a higher consciousness. And I felt like I was this bug almost. And I was in the ground dormant. I could see through these like multifaceted bug eyes, and I had these very, very thin sort of bug limbs, black limbs, and it was almost like a butterfly energy eventually. But I could feel myself waking up from the soil and coming up and being very, very small because the blades of grass were ginormous. And then I could see the sunshine coming through, and I just knew I was back. I'm back home. I'm returned, and I'm here, and I'm joyous. And the messages started coming through. There's so many I learned throughout the seven ceremonies, which my book goes into. But the first thing was, nothing matters. And I was so excited about it. I threw my hands up in the sky. It was a relief. Nothing matters. And then the caveat was nothing matters except love, the highest vibrational energy there is, which is Source God. But it was a relief that nothing matters. It didn't matter that I lost my job. New York didn't matter. None of this crap mattered. My job title didn't matter. It was a relief to know that I'm in the moment of now and I'm co-creating with the higher power that loves me. And I'm here in a protected container where I'm here to learn and grow and rediscover. And so that was really the essence of that first ceremony that, oh, and to protect the plants. You know, it's important to continue to protect Mother Nature and stop destroying our forests and having a sort of scarcity approach and a disrespect to the environment we live in, because the environment is what sustains us and is what naturally, keeps us in a beautiful state of conscious creation.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, I think we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, let's talk about what happened when you got back after these seven ceremonies. Like, it's one thing to go to the jungle, have these amazing, beautiful awakening experiences, but then we come home and then we have to deal with real life. So I want to talk about that and what people should be aware of when they do engage in these things for what happens afterwards, because I'm really big on integration. Okay.
You got it.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Wednesday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back with our guest, Sarah Roccascino, in just a moment.
Are you a spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Sarah Roccascino, author of the upcoming book, Stone Temple Passport, Awake and Radiate with Mama Ayahuasca. By the way, when's the book coming out? Do you know
In
yet?
July,
In July.
yeah,
Okay.
We're nearly
All right.
there.
Yeah, almost there. Yep. Let me know. Hey, if you do a book tour and you come to New York City for the book tour, let me know. I'll get a bunch of people come out for it. Okay.
I will. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. So you went down to, it sounds like Peru. You did these ceremonies, you did seven ceremonies, which is tremendous. Just out of curiosity, how did you feel in the last ceremony?
Oh, the last one was the doozy. The last one was the bad trip, as they say. There are a lot of people who are very nervous about psychedelics because of the bad trip that potentially can happen. Plus, obviously, we caveat this. Please talk to your professional doctors and others. Ayahuasca is a very powerful medicine, and those that have SSRIs and other sort of medications they're taking, it's best to figure out this is the right for you. And I say that because ceremony seven, I felt like I was having an epileptic seizure. And I was shaking nonstop, shaking, 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 constant sweat, couldn't see. I felt like I was blind, in a near panic state. Thought I was in a hysterics, thought I was going to get arrested. Thought the CIA was outside the Moloka looking for me. I thought that I was in such a d terrible shape that I would, they would first throw me in jail and then take me to Bellevue. I literally kept thinking that I'm going to Bellevue that when I get back to New York, that I'm in such a bad situation right now and I'm terrified. And what was happening was it was as if my life review was going on in the beginning, and I could feel the pain and emotion of everybody, including a lot of heavy metal rock stars. Like I could feel Metallica. I like channeled James Hetfield and Robert Trujillo, who is the bassist, and I could see myself on stage, like just channeling the essence of their songs. And I could, there's a song called Judas Kiss from their Death Magnetic album, and there's a line that says, "Major towers fall," because it talks about Judas, and the towers obviously are 9/11. And so the towers falling came through as a vision. I relived 9/11. I relived every single pain and trauma in my schooling and working on Wall Street, getting laid off, being in very, very difficult, stressful situations that I was in throughout the time I lived in New York. I was seeing, as some may think of conspiracy truths being shown to me by the medicine, because they say that the psychedelics are quite tattletales, and what the news tells you is not necessarily the truth. And who ultimately, is causing the pain and suffering, especially when it came to the towers coming down. And so that was a big revelation. And then I had my third eye completely crack open. It was as if this laser beam was coming through the center apex of the malocca and zapped right into my third eye, and my whole brain started shaking, and I rolled my eyes and I couldn't roll them backwards, back to focus. And I thought that the shamans broke my brain and couldn't figure out how to put it back, and I'm shaking, 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 because my brain is zinging with this light. But I was observing it from a third person perspective, as if I was outside of my body watching it. And then I started embodying the god Ra, the ancient Egyptian god. And then I started embodying Isis, and then the beautiful winged creature that you see in the hieroglyphics, as if I was a bird. And I also would see, I talk about the time I went to Machu Picchu in 2013, and there's this very, very powerful stone from one of the older stones of Machu Picchu. The Inca built on top of the older megalithic stones that are a lot more curious and quizzical and inexplicable. And there's this one stone called the Intihuatana, which is the hitching post of the sun, and it's a 21-sided cut stone. And I saw this stone vibrate and radiate with this most intense white light that was as if I was in the middle of the sun without any heat. And I was integrating with that light. It was an activation, it felt like. And so all in all, I was just obviously, going through massive, massive, massive physical, mental, excruciating, emotional pain, suffering. And ultimately, as I was like now pleading with whoever could hear me, because I couldn't see, and my head was, pretty much like a dead weight on the ground, and I'm constantly shaking. Please let this stop. Please make this stop. Where is everybody? Please make this stop. And by then, the ceremony had been over. The maestros were out the door. No one was around
Oh my God.
except for one person. It was Door Angel. And the Door Angels are local people from the villages nearby that are hired to just make sure overnight that everyone's still okay. And this person didn't speak English. His name is Dennis. And I could feel, at the time I didn't know, but I could feel someone behind me tap me real quick and then quickly go away. And I said, "Who's that? Who's that? I can't see you. Help me, help me." And I tapped again. And then I looked around. Finally, my eyesight was coming back a little bit, and I could see his terrified face in my headlamp. And I said, "Oh my God, please help me." And I grabbed him from my knees, and I like just held on for dear life. I was crying hysterically, and I was staining his skin almost. But the power of compassion, the power of a hug, the power of just being with me and staying with me in this most excruciatingly emotional moment is what got me back. Because the intention I set for ceremony 7 was show me the compassion of God, and there it was. And then as I felt a little bit better and composed myself, I was now pacing. Where am I? I'm sorry. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Where am I? Where am I? And then I could hear these footsteps, barefoot, pattering on the Molucca wood floor. And then it was Michelle, my friend. And she said, "Shh, come here." And she grabbed me and brought me down to sit with her and put me in the lap of her, you know, seated position, and stroked my hair and just kept saying, shh, it's okay. Shh. And I said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. She goes, you don't have nothing to be sorry about. And I said, and I told her everything. I felt all the pains and all the, you know, the external worlds, the CIA, you know, all these just awful things that have been done to humanity, and I can't believe it, and the control systems and the matrix and all this fucking bullshit and blah, blah, blah. And she kept saying shh, and she goes, you've gone through what all of us have been going through throughout these 2 weeks. You just happen to be one of the last ones that are going through the breakdown. And that's what it was. Ultimately, the next day, it was the power of compassion that ultimately you're still going to be okay no matter what. And that was some of the takeaways too, is when you surrender and trust and connect with the higher vibrational energy, the compassionate love of the creator and of the creator within all of us, that's where the real beauty, you know, really manifests.
I mean, that's a lot to experience in a short amount of time, and that's a lot to come through. And then you come back home, and then what happens?
Coronavirus shut down New York City. So I left 5 weeks prior to the world being one way. Wow. And completely removed from society, completely remote, because we continue on to Bolivia and the Altiplano and the Andes Mountains and these very, very, the salt flats of Uyuni and others. Lake Titicaca, we went to Tiwanaku, Pumapuku as well, the megalithic stone structures that are inexplicable. I did a lot of work with Wiracocha as well, so we go into that in the book. But finally coming back home, we're talking the end of February at this point, and us New Yorkers know New York really shuts down when they cancel St. Patrick's Day, the parade, in March 13, 2020. And that's what it was. So I came back with awakened eyes, because there's so much more beyond the material veil. And I also came back more emboldened, because I realized that I don't like authority, and I don't want, I don't like the narratives that are being thrusted upon me, because it doesn't feel real or right to me or correct, or it feels something's off. And so that's ultimately one of the big kind of takeaways too, is like, I know what's best for me. I know what my sense of empowerment is. And I know that what feels right and wrong for me is for me to make the determination, not to be, you know, judged and yelled at and, you know, punished and all these other things. And so I think that's what it was. It was a better understanding of the matrix and the control structures and these sort of artificial systems that are placed upon us that are not with the light. And I was in integration in my apartment, in my tiny apartment in Midtown Manhattan, as the world was shut down. So it was very, very hard because I had already lost my job. So I was already alone. I have a new sort of spiritual awakening going on. I don't believe what the news is telling me, because it's not exactly what I'm seeing right in front of me, because that's the what's real, what's going on, where am I ongoing theme of the book. It's, you know, what we think is real is an illusion in some ways, or what we've been conditioned to believe is real because the external world is telling us this is the truth. And I think that's what we're going through now in this chaos that, you know, that we're in. We're questioning everything now. What is real? Right. And that's ultimately, I got a head start in some ways doing it. So a lot of the integration for me was finding the light where I can, and putting compassion where I could, and trying to be understanding, but at the same time, protective of my sovereignty. And a lot of the work I was doing was just continuing to be outside and sit by the East River, which is where it was my quiet place, and Central Park. And really, it was a blessing in a lot of ways, because everyone being so quiet and the city being so quiet was helpful for me in integration. But that was only in hindsight that I realized that it was a really interesting time for integration.
So then after that, what was the inspiration for you to start Embolden Adventures? And then what got you to say, I need to write a book about my experiences?
So in 2016, I started Embolden Adventures, and it was just a travel blog. And it was something where I was already 2.5 years unemployed, out of work, in my apartment, you know, paying the mortgage. It was a very difficult experience. And I was in the darkest of places at that time. And my creative outlet was just to start writing. I was already journaling as I was traveling, and photojournaling and the like. But this was just a way to get my mind off of like the dark that I was feeling, with constant rejection, constant not having a job, constant being, you know, not accepted by the system anymore, you know, because there's grief with an unemployment, and there's grief of being let go, and there's grief of being, rejected. So I was processing that in a way that I didn't have the, I think, some tools to do so. So the only way I could was creative outlet. And so when I decided to really kind of step up in Bold and Adventures into what it's becoming now, is because I decided I was going to write a book in 2022. And when I came back in 2020, I was able to land another job, and that was just the beginning of the end toward my ultimate, that's it. I'm going to be an entrepreneur now, and I don't want to ever go back to what this was ever again.
So, I mean, what kind of reaction did you get from your friends and family when you came back? Did everyone think you lost your mind? Were people supportive? Like, what was it like for you kind of coming back to the community you were part of?
Well, I was very alone because I was by myself in New York, and we were in isolation, right? You couldn't go out, you couldn't do anything. So the only real touch points I had was text messaging. And we would have group text messages, but the group kind of divided. Some were like, "Can't you just listen to the science? And can't you just, be a good compliant societal member and just do, get the vax, do all this?" And others were like, "Are you crazy? This is, can't you see this?" So it was very dichotomy, it was very different, the perspectives people had. So there was a lot of fracturing, I think. And I was angry. I was just angry in general because I was purging all the different stuff. It wasn't just coronavirus, it was everything. The burnout, the lack of companionship, the just being mad at the world. And so I isolated a lot. There wasn't much. And I think people were just like, "What is happening with her? She's usually this bubbly bubble of joy, and here she is like so angry." So I think that's what it was. Like, people were concerned, but then when I took it the next step, like, I'm done. I don't want to do anything that I'm being forced upon me. I want to do what's right for me. I want to be empowered. And I know that sounds selfish to some, and maybe in some ears, but that's what this is, right? The world around us pushes us. And how do we find that moment, that pause in between that Viktor Frankl talks about, right? Between the pause, the it's like a, I forget the way that the quote goes, but he always talks about the importance of the pause.
Pause,
And right? And then really thinking, like, how do I connect within? What feels right for me? What is my truth? Where can I look out for myself to make sure that I'm living the most glorious life for the greater good and for me? And not being swayed and persuaded and pushed around, and knowing that my boundaries are important. I think that's where it challenges us. And once you know that that's something you could trust and surrender to, the rest is just noise. So I think that's ultimately, it took a long time to get to that point. And then, like I said, the straw that broke the camel's back was in 2022. And I was like, "That's it, I'm going to do this."
So with your book, Stone Temple Passport, what's the intention behind writing the book, and what do you hope people get from it?
So I started writing it as a blog on Facebook, just kind of talking about what was the cool wisdoms and what I learned. But I realized that as I'm putting it together, there's so much deeper, powerful messages here about how it's all interconnected. And there's no such thing as coincidences, that you want to protect the plants, that nothing matters, as we talked about. That there's more beyond the material veil than we realize, beyond our five senses, that there's a higher power, that you're the higher power, that you're interconnected with that higher power, that the highest vibrational energy there is love, therefore God, and that we are in low vibe states in this three-dimensional world, and that there's so much about the power of reciprocity and this concept called Aini, which is a indigenous principle of knowing that the intertwining of the natural world that sustains. And so help me help you help me kind of sort of approach. And so there was a lot of kind of introspection for me to write this book for myself to see what I can do. And in doing so, this beautiful world of Embolden Adventures is unfolding around me, which allowed for me to now become a speaker, which allowed for me to build this transformational program in the works, which now encouraged me to write two more books that follow for this Transformational Adventure Now series, which is 100% true story, all of them. Now it's a tour operation opportunity where I'll be offering trips to Morocco, the Amazon, and to Bolivia to for the reader to trace their steps as the book shows. And with those very people that were in the book, like or the tour guides, there's a retreat I'm building out in Belize, in the jungles of Belize. I mentioned in the book my friend who owns the property, and I'll be teaching the takeaways. The classroom will be there next year, 2027, and so much more. I realize now that there's a beautiful opportunity to share gifts, and in the sense, in the power of reciprocity, the reward comes your way as well. So I'm here to see what this beautiful idea can now manifest into a reality that feels aligned, authentic, and unshackled from that 9-to-5 paycheck that I thought was the only way to exist and be.
So someone, let's say, listening to this podcast or reading your book, and they start to get curious about, medicine work for themselves. What would you recommend they do before they do something? I mean, seven ayahuasca ceremonies, that's something I would rarely recommend to somebody. But what
Exactly.
would you say to people who want to learn more and want to take a more conscious approach to what they do?
Yeah. Well, I think the first step is to listen to your blog post, is to find that ability to know the quiet within and to start connecting with nature. And, go walk barefoot in the grass, go to Central Park and walk barefoot, get away from the concrete and a lot of the kind of dissonant energies that are around us in New York. When I go back to the city now, I'm like, I feel different, and it's not a good thing. I feel very off. The constant noise, the constant stress, the constant stranger danger, every corner is a face you don't recognize. Your body is subconsciously on edge. And I was that way for 22 years, especially in the city, like taking the subway. You hear the noises of the brakes of the train, and just it's just this constant energy, and it may not be a good thing. And so really listen to your body, listen to your need for peace and quiet and connection with spirit and within, because eventually the teacher shows up when the student's ready, and then eventually it will be an ongoing discovery for yourself. My way isn't the only way, it's just a way, and it's a way that worked for me, and it opened a door for me to continue to work with the plant medicines and other modalities. I've now worked with ayahuasca 10 times. I've worked with mushrooms, I've worked with other sort of huachuma, heart opener in Ecuador, and so a lot of my books will go into those sort of ceremonies as well. But I think generally speaking, though, it's work with various medicine modalities like sound, right? Sound healing, singing, anything that raises your vibration in a state of joy and a sense of empowerment of and a sense of self-love. And then you'll start to attract your tribe and find your community, and then you'll continue to explore what feels right for you.
Very good. Very good. Absolutely. Absolutely. With all that you've been through and the, I guess, internal peace that you found within yourself, does anything still challenge you today other than coming
Oh.
to New York City?
Always. I mean, life is going to be always an ongoing need for learning and growing and expansion, because we're in infinite creation and there's constant unfolding. And I talk a lot in my book about the motion, which I saw visually in ceremony. It's this multidimensional mass of constant creation, and everything, past, present, future, is all within this motion that constantly unfolds. And so, yeah, there's always going to be need for growth, especially if you transcend to the higher consciousness. You're still learning and growing. They even say the archangels don't know everything. So, I think for me, like, the challenges now are trusting in the calling and trusting in the unknown and knowing that it's a mindset thing. So if I already think the unknown is scary and limiting and prohibitive, then I'm going to get the field's going to return back to me what I put out. So if I'm going to continue to practice a state of gratitude, a state of trust in self, knowing that my higher power has me no matter what, trust and surrender, everything's a blessing, everything's working for me in my best interest, and I can manifest whatever I want, it's real. The subconscious is quite powerful. And so that's the ongoing practice every day. And I'm just very fortunate that I get to do it now in nature, not in, a tiny little cramped apartment where there's constant noise, construction, and horns and slamming doors.
So you mentioned, do you have any kind of daily practice? Like, do you meditate every day, or is it just a walk in nature? Like, what do you do on a daily basis to help to maintain your internal peace?
Yes, I go on my spirit walks every morning. So what I do without a phone, and now I have a dog, so I take my dog as well. So in the morning, I'll walk to the top of this very tall hill that I live on, and I give reverence to the sky. I connect with the sun. I look at the clouds. I look at, the hawk or the bobcat or the deer or the beautiful birds. I think I remind myself at this one particular point in the walk about the power of abundance. And I've been doing it consistently for now 3 years. So I've been seeing the seasons, and I remind myself, oh, just 4 weeks ago we had a blizzard, and now look what's happening. We see the constant evolution and unfolding of beautiful nature. And so that's a lot of the spiritual practice. But then I say my gratitudes. And then I drum. I have a Native American drum that I've taken around the world, especially to Yosemite when I was in California, which is another story for book two. But yeah, I drum for about 20 minutes in meditation, and I clear my chakras. I try to envision the toroidal field around me. I try to put myself in a protective bubble of light, and I put on this like scuba diving sort of wetsuit of protection and a cloak. And I just remind myself of clearing, constant clearing, and the importance of sovereignty and connection to higher power, and being in a quiet state where I can receive wisdoms, which happened to me today. I received some wisdoms, which was about remembering to rely on your higher power at no matter what. And it's got you. The higher power is much more powerful than you think. And so, I'm still mad about, now my thing is, which bothers me, is speed cameras, and I don't like the surveillance. But I'm approaching it in such a way where my old world wants to resist it and take an axe and, chop it down and spray paint it and yell at people and say, "Why are you doing this? This is stupid." But the other part of me is like, no, put love to it. Figure out how to outsmart the system. Figure out how to be invisible to the system. Use the system in a way where the whole collective now revolts and says, in a peaceful way, I don't want this. And know that everything is an illusion. It's all energetic creation. So if your illusionary world around you is giving a speed camera, well, how do you change the illusion is really the real question. And so it's about understanding that your higher power, your subconscious, is a lot more powerful than you think. And give it to God, give it to the higher power, and let it figure it out. It's not your job in the three-dimensional world to stress about it.
They say that, the angels all around you waiting to help you, but you just got to remember to ask them.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Beautiful. So, Sarah, if people want to learn more about you, if people want to learn about Emboldened Adventures, where can they find it online? What can they do?
Of course. So you can follow me at sararoccasano.com, SarahRoccasano.com. That's my speaking website. EmboldenAdventures.com is actually going to be a reboot. So give it another 2 months. You'll see a brand new website. Right now, it's a placeholder travel blog. And then StoneTemplePassport.com, which is coming to bookstores soon in July. So stay tuned for that. It's a very powerful book. I will say it is the most the best first person account of a psychic ayahuasca experience you're going to find in a written book. And I
Oh,
stand by that
beautiful.
statement. Yeah, it's
I
very
look
powerful.
forward to reading it when it comes out. Do you have an actual date yet, or is it just July sometime?
Yeah, July, I'm self-publishing, so it's in final layout right now. The audiobook's already recorded and edited. It's
Oh,
just a matter of
nice.
putting some fine-tuned things to the launch beyond just the book. So there's a lot more coming with that, and
So
ultimately it's going to
it'll
be a
be on
book.
Amazon and all the
Yes.
bookstore sites. Wonderful.
Ebooks, audiobook, there's a companion supplemental photo gallery, which is the photos of the adventure. There's merchandise, there's a whole bunch of things. But and there'll be a book launch party for those who want to come to Stamford, Connecticut in September, it looks like it's going to be. So get your tickets now. You can meet me in person and we could talk about the book and celebrate together. This is a labor of love.
Stamford's not so far away, so I'll hop the train up. Well, Sarah, listen, it's a pleasure having you come on my show and share your experiences. I really appreciate it. I look forward to, you know, hearing more in the future. And listen, after you've come out with your full series of the all three books, we'll have you back on the show and talk about them all. Okay.
Very good, Sam. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the time. And thank you everyone for listening. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc and on your favorite podcasting app, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Amazon, wherever you love to listen to podcasts, you can find the Conscious Consultant Hour. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
Are you a spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.